Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? You get what you
need. Oh, yeah. Hey there. I am Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show. You know, it's been a long day for Carol the Coach here, and I actually double booked somebody. And one of the things I know is when somebody doesn't show up or they late cancel with me, they get charged. My time's valuable. Their time's valuable. They get charged. But when I do it, and we all make mistakes, don't we? Then I give them a free session. That's how I choose to be congruent with what I expect from my clients. So here's the deal. I worked from 8 to 5. My group was from 6 to 7:30. I'm sorry. My group was from 5 to 6:30. And then I told my client, come back at 7 and I'll see you. I ran home. I fed my dog. And I came back and I saw him till 8. And it is 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And I am here with you. So I feel very good about that. I'm showing up. Because I believe in you, and I believe in sex addiction recovery. I believe in a partner-sensitive model. This is all so very important to me. And so I just want you to know I care about you, and it is my job to inform and educate you about what resources are out there for you if you are a person who suffers from sexual addiction, or you're a person who is married to a sex addict, or you're a person who is divorced from a sex addict, or you're just kind of wondering, do you have a problem? This show is what it's all about, and I'm so thankful that there are over 500,000 open downloads a week. Nobody listens to me on Monday night. I know we've got the debate going on right now in many parts of the country. But you know what? That's okay, because I want you to be able to clean your house or mow your lawn and listen to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And I got a very interesting email, and it was from, well, let me just tell you. It was from a person that said, hey, I've been listening to the show for a long time, and I wanted to express how much I appreciate the time and effort you put into the show. It has helped my wife and I immensely, and I'm very grateful. I especially like your YouTube videos that you have on the Sex Help with Carol the Coach channel on YouTube. Now, I'm going to just give you a side note here. I have just started this. I probably have about 12, 15, 20 videos. Some of them are for the addict. Some of them are for the partner. But I would love to have your feedback because I get on there and I talk to you honestly. I sit in the same place right in front of the computer. My dog, Boo, is right behind me. It is what it is. And I disseminate 10, 15 minutes of information to help guide you to the next situation. And I, because I'm a coach and a psychotherapist, a mental health therapist, I try to give you bullet points. I try to give you formulas that I do believe will work. You know, what are the 10 recovery tools? What are the 6 things you should do if you're an addict to make your partner feel more comfortable? You know, tell me about your conflict because I'm going to tell you about the 4 tools of conflict, the 5 primary feelings. So I'm going to give you information that I hope you can have a takeaway and feel like you got a little bit something that you can apply to your life. Anyway, this person says that he's been out in and out of recovery for about 6 years, and he has struggled with sexual addiction for many years. He grew up in a home where his father was an alcoholic, and he says, my mother was a codependent. I have 2 younger brothers and a younger sister. I was emotionally abused and physically abused at school from the age of around 9, clear through my junior year in high school by my peers. This man was bullied. He always felt lonely and struggled with isolation. And he started acting out at the age of 13 with masturbation, and it progressed to chat rooms, pornography, and after marriage, he acted out with my wife's niece, and he even served time in prison. Now, he began attending SAA meetings while out on bond, and for those of you that are just listening, that's Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings. I highly recommend those. They are available if you just Google SAA.org or SAA-recovery.org, you'll find them all over the world. So he started attending those groups, and he found them to be very helpful. It really kind of saved his life. And within about a month after he began acting out again with pornography, and he started acting out with another woman. So you can see that it's not necessarily just the groups that can keep you from acting out. Although, truly, if you ask Carol the coach, I'll tell you, those meetings are by far the most important recovery tools you can use, along with a sponsor, doing the 12-step work, doing the reading, calling people in the fellowship, of course attending meetings. I would have told this guy, get to 90 meetings in 90 days, and then see a CSAT therapist, get yourself into a therapy group for sex addicts, pray or meditate, do recovery reading, put all sorts of filters on your phone, be transparent, let your partner see everything you're doing, and have healthy behaviors. Now, that's 11 tools. But if he had done all those tools, I guarantee you, he would have done better. So he says, my wife has been with me through it all, and this last incident has led me to take my addiction even more seriously. I found a CSAT therapist, that's a certified sexual addictions therapist. If you need a CSAT therapy, go to sexhelp.com, put in your zip code, your state, your country, and it will give you CSATs in your area. And he began attending 3 SAA groups a week, and he attended group therapy. My wife has also attended some of the therapy, and we continually work hard to save our marriage. Now, guys, I want to tell you, as crazy as his behavior may sound, this is a man that wants to make it work. He's doing what he needs to after he found out that what he was doing wasn't working. Unfortunately, any kind of recovery is trial and error. If you do it perfectly, you won't have the trial and error. But most people don't know how to do it perfectly, so they just do it, can I be so bold, half-assed. And then they find out that's not good enough. And so this show is to help him to know what to do better. He says, I've always had loving support from my family and friends, lots of support from my congregation, even though I've been disfellowshipped twice. It's almost been a year to the day that I last acted out in my inner circles. Now, again, on my YouTube, I talk about what are inner circles. You know, in SAA, they talk about the three-circle approach. And I did a YouTube on this because it's kind of hard to understand, and I don't want you to believe me. I mean, I want you to reference that on Sex Help with Carol the Coach on YouTube, and then get yourself to an SAA meeting because they talk about it in the Green Book. And that is, the inner circle are your deal-breaking behaviors. The middle circle are the slippery slopes. I've got a lot of guys who they think they can look at pictures and images of women in bikinis. Well, guess what? You can't. Even though that may not be pornographic, that may not be deal-breaking behaviors, it will light up the reward center in your brain just like porn does, open you up to all sorts of other behaviors. Now, I'm not a person that is militant, but I know brain science, and I know brain chemistry, and I know what lights up the brain. And if those bikini pictures light it up, and they will, you are much more likely to act out. Whether that means that you see a prostitute, you are an exhibitionist, you end up going to chat rooms, you have to do the straight and narrow here. And I promise you, if you do the straight and narrow, you will be better than 95% of all people out there. That's the good news. You can be a better man or woman than 95% of the general public. But you have to do the work to work it. And that's what I'm always saying. It is imperative that you do the work. So this man says, and you can tell he's been to a CSAT, they do weekly check-ins, they read books, they talk frequently, they work on intimacy, and they're still struggling. So next week I'm going to talk to you about what their struggles are. But I got to tell you, I talked with men today about intimacy. And there are five fears of intimacy. It's like an umbrella. If you can imagine, you may have heard me talk about the fact that all feelings fall under these five. Anger, sadness, loneliness, fear, and happiness. So if you're upset, that may be anger or sadness. If you're frustrated, it's probably anger. If you're disappointed, it's probably sadness. But this umbrella, they're like the spokes, and all feelings fall under the five of those. And then we also add, as a side note, shame and guilt. Well, it's the same thing. It is absolutely the same thing with intimacy. There are five major intimacy issues. They're actually fears of intimacy. And they are fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of merger, you know, people getting too close to you, you losing your identity, fear of hurting others, and fear of being hurt. Now, there are plenty of other fears. Like I had a man today that said, well, I have fear of acceptance. Well, fear of acceptance is on the other side of fear of rejection. If you fear being rejected, what you really want is acceptance. So, obviously, sexual addiction is an intimacy disorder. And those are the five fears. When we come back next week, we're going to share some more of this man's email so we can talk about what he's doing right, what may not be working, and what tools he can use to get healthier. Tonight, I am really excited to be interviewing Maria Wesley Stewart. She is an LMSW. She is in the process of getting her certified sexual addiction therapist degree, certification actually. She's going to have her LCSW this fall. And she is a recovering partner of a sex and love addict whom she was married to for 17 years. She talks about the struggle that she went through in being with this husband who had a porn and sex addiction. And she's really amazing because she shows you what it's like to be a partner and the trials and tribulations of what a partner may experience. All the way from, you know, wanting to believe in the addict and then being abused by the addict and needing to have her own boundaries so that she actually was safe and deciding what she needed to get healthy, which included a CSAT, deciding when was enough, you know, I always talk about that clearly. When somebody says, I've had enough, enough is enough, that's a great way to determine that you need to go a different direction. So I can't wait for you to get to meet Maria and hear her story, as well as, you know, she kind of has it all. She's been a partner of a sex addict. She's getting her CSAT. She's really got a lot of expertise in partner-sensitive trauma, and so I guess we need to welcome her now. Maria, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach Show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm so excited for you to be on, because one of the things that I know with the sex addicts that listen is that they gain so much from hearing another woman talk about her struggles and what she went through loving an addict. And then we got lots of partners who listen and go, I want what she has. So I appreciate you coming on the show. You've obviously made it your mission to educate people. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
I can. Do you just want me to? And I want to thank you very much, Carol, for having me on your show. I've been listening to you, goodness, all through my process, and it has been just a beacon in the darkness to my process. So I appreciate your show very much.
Well, thank you very much. I know you actually had been listening to the show before you decided to be a CSAT, right?
Mm-hmm. I did.
And you sent me a wonderful email and said, hey, I need to get in touch with you because listening to the show kind of saved your life.
It very much did. It was very much a self-care thing. I got really into running, and I would put on my iPod and my earphones, and then just set to it, and I would listen to your show just more often than anything else. And it would allow me to just be somewhere else for a little while and get something healthy in my system, and learn a little bit more about what this process is, because when you're in the middle of it, sometimes it's really hard to see the forest for the trees when you're the partner and or the sex addict, I think. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, that's what this show is all about. And now it's your turn to help others with this situation. So give us some of your story.
Okay. I met my husband in 1993, and I had actually just graduated from my bachelor's program, and I was entering into my MSW program at the time, and just had already was growing in a passion for, I think I did my my thesis on child sexual abuse, and just had a real heart for anybody who had been through great trauma. So he met me during that time in my life, and we proceeded to date for 2 to 3 years, and we got married in 1996. And unbeknownst to me at the time, he had a great struggle already happening with porn. And a great struggle really since his early childhood, and I had no idea about any of it. So went into the marriage and everything was really going really great through the date, the courtship part of the relationship. And then once we got married, things got really hard. We got along really great as long as the topic wasn't sex. And if that topic was on the table, there was a lot of bullying, a lot of just really power dynamic, kind of about not really listening to what it is that I needed in terms of it being a mutual decision when we would go about that, and the intimacy not being mutual at all in that regard. So that sort of persisted through the early part of our marriage, and we had three amazing kids and a lot of amazing memories. And then in that early part of our marriage, probably that first 10 years, there were a few discoveries, I like to say, along the way. Nothing huge. You know, I would learn about some porn use, or I would learn about a movie that was rented or something like that. But we would have a discussion, and I would cry, and then we would kind of move on, and I would think that it was not very significant. And about 10 years into our marriage, I think it was 2007, he had gone to a retreat, a Christian retreat, and he had had a lot of his friends at this retreat convince him that he needed to come clean with me about his struggle with porn. So he came home from that, and I had what I call my first real discovery. And he proceeded to tell me that it was a huge problem way before we got married, and he had been really struggling with it. And I remember crying a lot and being very, very confused and not really having any idea of where to put that in our relationship, because we had three children. I was very attached to him, very much, you know, wanted to see it through, but also that was definitely the first big trauma in terms of, I felt like I was married to someone who had been deceiving me and not being clear with me about who he was. So we proceeded to see lots of counselors over the next few years, and none of whom were CSATs, which came to be rather significant, because I would sort of voice that I was having a problem with all this porn, and nobody, I don't even remember any counselor really even responding in any way at all, you know, to that. Could
well,
that
so
be
much
a problem?
Counselors don't know what to do with this. I mean, it seems pertinent to any of us, but really you can get some horrible advice from counselors that just don't get how somebody can be affected by any kind of sexual addiction, including porn.
Absolutely. And I think, and I've heard from other partners, that there's almost a re-traumatizing process, because you're absolutely not validated with the betrayal and the pain that is going on and the deception that is going on. And I think you're right, Carol. I think people have no idea of the level someone can get addicted and the betrayal that happens between the two parties. And so what people always talk about on your show played out in our relationship as well. And then about 2008, there proceeded to be some physical abuse started to happen. And then after that, some sexual assaults kind of started to happen, and they would happen over a course of time, meaning like over 2 or 3 years, and they just sort of were strung along in that process. And I've come to learn in my recovery that I think I disassociated from some of that, because I don't really have some, I have memories of them happening, but I also had shame that I was a therapist and that was happening to me. And I thought that I didn't know what to do with that. You know.
Well, and I didn't want to traumatize you any further, but what I'm assuming happened, so just kind of correct me if I'm wrong, is that you did not want to participate in sex, and on some level he forced himself on you as your husband.
Well, it wasn't exactly that. To respect him and I would like to say that, not to go into detail about some stuff that happened, but it was more of a voyeuristic nature in terms of the assaulting me by doing something that I chose, that I would never have chosen to have done to me, voyeuristically speaking. And him very much minimizing that I shouldn't have a problem. I shouldn't think of that as any big deal, and, you know, you should blow it off, and that kind of rhetoric going on threaded throughout the
but not paying attention to your boundaries, basically.
Absolutely not. And very much knowing at that, yes, and knowing at that time that he had such a problem with porn, there was struggle for me in how he was going to weave those together, and I've tried to learn about Patrick Carnes' types of sex addiction, and I think from best I can put it together, it's kind of a combination of the intrusive and the exploitative sex that happened, because I also could not understand why I still felt so loyal to him, other than just I loved him and we had these children. And it's funny how it's all woven together now, looking back on it over time, you know. So that was all going on, and then at the end there was one bigger sexual assault that happened, in which I finally, like you said before I got on the show, I said enough is enough, and I finally said I absolutely will not tolerate this. And I had been researching sex addiction in terms of therapists, and I found what a CSAT was. I sort of deduced it from some of the things I had read, and then I found a CSAT online, and I said, you know, we're going to go see a CSAT or I'm out of here. But I said, so we started to do that. And while I think that helped, I think, and this is part of my story that I think becomes different, is the emotional and sort of sexual abuse that was sort of threaded through it, and how even a CSAT kind of coming against this, if the addict doesn't want to begin to accept the other person's boundaries, and it wouldn't stop is kind of what happened. And
can I interject real quick?
Sure.
One of the things I know is that what you were referencing before with a regular therapist is that it was therapist betrayal, because the therapist didn't know exactly what the dynamics were between you and your husband and understand about addiction, and especially about partner trauma. They couldn't help you appropriately. They didn't mean to do harm, but they were doing harm. And
Absolutely. You're
going to be a CSAT candidate. You are a CSAT candidate. You're going to be a CSAT.
Mm-hmm.
I am a CSAT, and we are certainly getting training in partner trauma and partner sensitivity therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, there's this amazing institution called APSATS, and it is the partner training trauma therapy specifically for men and women of sexual addiction, that, you know, they are married, they are a partner of sexual addiction, and they really understand the boundaries. And sometimes they get very upset with CSATs who so affiliate themselves with sex addicts that it can be very difficult to really understand how a partner truly feels. And I think that's what you're kind of talking about.
Absolutely. And I felt like our CSAT, it was exactly what you're saying. I felt like she was doing exactly her job, but I didn't feel like there was a sensitivity to, in my situation, to the great deal of harm that had been done because of the boundary violations, and how I needed repair and safety. And I felt like I was having to scream for the idea of safety, you know, and it was not really, it was kind of being heard, but the sex addict was coming back with, well, but I need this too. And I was trying to say, but I can't do any of it without safety, you know.
So, oh, absolutely. That's a fundamental, isn't it?
Absolutely. So we kind of progressed to the point of he got more physically intimidated a few times, and I finally asked him to leave the house, and he did. And I was still in the marriage 100% and was, you know, still very much in love with him, but setting very clear boundaries about, I can't let you back in this home until you deal with the abuse situation and the different violations that you have done. And it just progressed to get worse. And then he asked me for an end to the marriage. So I said, okay, that would be, you know, fine. So I filed for divorce. So it did not have the ending that I had hoped, but I felt like I got to exactly what you were referring to. Enough was enough there at the end. So
you took a situation and made it your own. I mean, clearly, I'm always talking to addicts who are in true recovery and saying, you're going to be the best person ever, and you're going to actualize your potential beyond imagination because you're in good, solid recovery. And that goes the same for the partners. I mean, you have now decided to become a CSAT, and you are you done with your second module?
I completed my third in July.
Fantastic. We are so excited to have you, you know, in our organization, because we need more partners who are also CSAT. And again, for anybody who's listening, that's a certified sexual addictions therapist. So you got to tell me, what actually made you decide to become a CSAT?
I found myself trying to reinvent. You know, I filed for divorce, and then I found myself sort of looking into the black hole of the future, and I just kept telling myself just to take one step after another. It was so very scary, and I think it, you know, it was for my ex-husband as well too. But so it just kept coming to my heart over and over again because of the journey that I had been on and the fact that I had been to so many therapists in our marriage who, just like you said, did not mean to do any harm, but really did not have an idea of the dynamic that he and I were going through and the help that we needed. So it just sort of became a natural progression toward taking those steps.
So go ahead, and does your ex-husband know that you are in training to be a CSAT?
I think he does. I have set very clear boundaries with him about, it's so very important to me to co-parent with him well, and I really had no idea how that would ever take place after all the trauma that had happened, but I think we've both done a pretty good job of not talking ill will about one another toward the children, to the children. And we've kind of, I've been pleasantly surprised that we've gotten to a place in our relationship that we can generally speak about the children and do a pretty good job at negotiating what we need to. But I've set boundaries with him that I don't really want to talk about anything else. So I don't really know.
Right. Well, you know what? I have to admire the fact that you both are working on that integrity piece of keeping the kids as neutral as possible and just making it work. You know, relationships are all about compromise and negotiation, whether you're married to somebody or you're not. And what I hear you saying is, for the betterment of the kids, we want to work together, make it as easy as possible. So I applaud you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's interesting because I just wrote an article, and, you know, I'm from Indianapolis, and it's Indy Kids, and this last week, and it was on forgiveness, and the forgiveness was not forgiving the parent for the wrongs that they had done, but forgiving them for making your life feel miserable and letting that go so that you can coordinate parenting. Because if you hold that rage and anger, you know, it definitely affects you. But more than that, kids know. They realize that mom and dad don't like each other, and that's a hard tension for them to walk away with.
Oh, I absolutely. I could not agree with you more. I do a lot of counseling now with divorce, just divorce as a topic, whether people are before divorce or after, and I find myself being able to impart the wisdom that I feel like I'm learning. And that is a lot of what you're saying, and that really, as I always say, that's still their daddy. And I want them to know that I respect that that's still their daddy, you know, and I want them to know that it's just, and it's also like you're saying, part of my recovery is that this whole trauma does not own all of my life. You know, but
absolutely. And, you know, you worked really, really hard on yourself. Was it just you that attended a very instrumental intensive, or did you both do intensive to get healthier?
We both did. We
tell us about yours first.
Okay. I did, I think they still have this intensive at the Meadows, and it's called Intimate Treason. Partners of Sex Addicts or something along those lines.
They absolutely still have that, the Claudia Black intensive.
Yes, absolutely.
And I
got to
tell you something, Maria.
Go ahead.
I have written a book of transcripts from the show, and I had Claudia Black on the show talking about that intensive and her book. And if I can just plug the book for a minute, it's not at all to reimburse me, but this is a book for all of our listeners to help research for sexual addiction and partner trauma. And so if you go to my website, you can either get the book, ebook, for $9.99, or you can request a hard copy, which then comes to me, and I mail it to you personally. And one of the chapters is Patrick Carnes, but the other chapter, well, this chapter, there's a chapter with me. There's a chapter with Claudia Black talking about partner trauma and that intimate betrayal and treason. And so you went to that workshop, and what would you say you learned the most about you?
Oh my gosh, I learned so much from, and we were so lucky. Claudia visited our particular intensive, I think on Thursday, and I think she was just passing through the Meadows, and she just happened to sit in there and did a process group with us, and it was amazing. But I think the thing that I came home with most, and it seems simple, but we went over to at a great deal during the intensive, something called bottom line boundaries. And I thought I kind of thought I knew boundaries because I was a therapist, but in the intensive, we went over the idea of what are your very, as a partner of sex addiction, what is it that you need, and what are your very bottom line boundaries that if these don't happen, then you will make the decision to leave. Because during my entire year of our therapy with our CSAT, the biggest question for me was, should I stay or should I go? And I know that's a lot of question. I'm sorry, that's a question for most partners along that process. And doing the bottom line boundaries part of that intensive was very, very powerful to me.
So what did you learn about yourself as you asked yourself, should I stay or should I go?
I think that's when I began to identify that I truly love this man, and I could probably work through any sex addictive behavior, such as anonymous sex or prostitutes or something that he might confess. But my bottom line boundary was that I needed to be safe in my home, and I needed to be safe in my relationship with my husband, and not have to endure any bullying or any assaults or any violations of my boundaries such as that. And I also I wanted him to deal, one of my bottom line boundaries, that I wanted him to get help with that aspect of how he behaved, that sort of abusive, emotionally and physically abusive part of the way he was behaving. And I could not stay married if that was not eliminated. So, and it was very helpful for me to get that on paper in black and white.
Well, absolutely. And you're right. That is the question that partners ask themselves throughout the whole recovery process. And I don't know. I believe that I've been very blessed to have partners and addicts who are really willing to work with each other. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like my addicts go above and beyond to not gaslight, which for partners that may be hearing the show for the first time, gaslighting is when the addict kind of makes you feel crazy for having the feelings and the thoughts and the suspicions and the intuition that you do. And ultimately, it's gaslighting because, in essence, maybe the addict is acting like he's not acting out at all. He's looking at images, or he's still looking at pornography, or he's still corresponding with one person. And because he's doing so much better, he is making it appear as if he is absolutely 100% faithful, when in reality, he's still acting out. Now, back to my original point, which is I have guys that I feel are doing a great job, and oftentimes we polygraph them to make sure they're mm-hmm. not lying to the partners. Was there a polygraph situation between you and your husband?
We tried that, and we went to the polygrapher, and we tried to kind of go through that. And I'll be honest, I don't have a very clear memory of that day. I think, like uh-huh. I said before, I think my brain did some disassociating when stuff was extremely hard for me to hear. And there was some stuff that transpired, because I think you've been over this in your show before, but when you take a polygraph test, you have to go through the questions prior to the test.
And oh, absolutely. You get to make up the questions, and then you're supposed to
right.
give them to the addicts so that they know exactly what they are, so that they can come clean even before they get to the polygrapher.
Right.
And that is a whole process that typically either a CSAT should do or somebody who has their APSATS training.
I highly recommend that, to do that with the partner. That would have been helpful for me, to have somebody to help me sort of make those questions. Because it's not a common practice to know how those things kind of go down. So I didn't really
exactly.
understand.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, you're sitting there thinking, I cannot believe I'm in a situation where I'm giving the man
right.
I love polygraph questions to have to do. You know, I can't believe that I can't trust my husband enough to just
right.
know he's being honest. So I know it's traumatizing to do it. It's certainly traumatizing for the addict. But again, in an addict partner situation, whether you're a CSAT therapist or a partner-trained therapist, you always defer to the partner, because, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
this happened to you. You didn't sign up for this. You didn't act out
right.
the behaviors. You were an innocent bystander. And so, obviously, one of the things you wanted to talk about tonight was the co-addict model, which is a very, very old model that I suspect
mm-hmm.
you and I both don't subscribe to.
Absolutely not. And that was part of
it. So would you tell our listening audience what the co-addict model is and why we don't subscribe to that?
I'll be honest, Carol, I don't entirely understand the model and where they came up with how that would be how you would end up as a partner. And I think that's partly because I have that partner bias through it all
mm-hmm.
for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the way
you want me to
I've
explain
it
a little bit
it,
and then you can share your experience with
that'd
that.
That'd be great.
Okay. initially, when sex addicts were treated, it was assumed that their partners were co-addicts, which was a term that said, you know, if the addict has this many problems and is this sick with their addiction, they must have married a woman who also is very, very sick and who had these issues in her childhood that then magnetized the addict to her. And so the thought was, you know, not only do you have to treat the addict, but you need to treat the sickness in the partner. Now, the bottom line, there are some partners that have had huge, major, major, major trauma as a kid. To call her or him, depending on who the partner is, to call her a co-addict pathologizes her. And she didn't sign up for marrying an addict. She may have had some trauma in her life, but the fact that we then place that pathology on her when maybe she had trauma or maybe she didn't, is wrong, and it belittles the partner. And the other thing I just want to say is that there are plenty of partners that have not suffered from post-traumatic stress in their childhood or, as you and I have talked before, complex post-traumatic stress. They actually didn't have trauma in their childhood, and it just hooked up with somebody that they loved, that fooled them, got involved in the sexual addiction, which is compulsive, that without the right and proper treatment tools, an addict doesn't know what to do with it. I'm not pathologizing him. I'm just saying that clearly there are plenty of partners that don't have this baggage. They don't have the trauma. They don't have the family issues. And to be called a co-addict is really, really offensive. And so you, when you were doing your work, you definitely felt like there was this co-addict model for partners in sexual addiction. And did that fit you? Did you feel like you magnetized your husband into your life because of your childhood issues?
I absolutely did not. And I did, now that you're putting it all in a succinct summary, I did feel that flavor sometimes, even through a CSAT or something that I might see. And it wasn't strong, but it would definitely make me feel, just like you're saying, like they were pathologizing what I felt like I didn't even know about when I was dating this person or marrying this person, and literally 10 years into it, didn't even know about, as many partners don't know about it, even years beyond that. So it very much feels like you're being pathologized about something you didn't even know was happening around you. And when I heard about the trauma model, I might have first heard about it at the intensive, at the Meadows, and it just really rang true for me that this was more like an abuse that happened, similar to if somebody was abused as a child or abused by a partner in some way, you know, domestic violence wise or something, that it seemed more like that kind of a trauma to me, where I spent a great deal of my time trying to respond to the dynamic or the deception and trying to figure it out all the time, and really not having an idea sometimes of what in the heck was going on, because there was so much deception, you know. So
absolutely, and that's kind of that gaslighting I was talking about. It was that deception of questioning everything that happens before you, because you're with somebody who is telling lies and is betraying you, and it's that, again, ultimate betrayal and treason. So now, what books would you recommend for recovery if you're a partner? Or, and I got to tell you something very cool, Maria, we've got a 12-step group that is doing nothing but, they have a book club where they're reading partner recovery materials. So they're reading.
That's amazing.
Mending the Shattered Heart. And they're reading Marsha Means and Barbara Steffens, My Sexually Addicted addicted spouse, so that they're really trying to understand, what is my partner going through? So what books would you recommend?
Oh, I definitely recommend The Mending the Shattered Heart. And I think that's by Stephanie Carnes. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It is. It's by Dr. Carnes, Patrick Carnes' daughter, who is now the president of ITAP.
That's right. And I also would recommend Claudia Black's books. We went through the workbook at that intensive, and I found that to be, if I remember correctly, that might be where the bottom line boundaries concept was really worked on for quite a few pages in that workbook. And it's called Intimate Treason, Healing the Trauma for Partners Confronting Sex Addiction, I think.
Exactly. Very nice. Yeah.
And then
her
book is, well, her book Deceived, I really had liked that one as well. I think that, like I said, that was a little bit more of the partner trauma model that I had not really gotten that very much. And we were supposed to read those books going into that intensive. And so I just devoured them at the time, I remember. Another book that is particular to the situation I had was a book I actually found by accident when I was at Barnes & Noble one night. And it's called Why Does He Do That? Inside the Mind of Angry and Controlling Men. And it's by a man named Lundy Bancroft. Bancroft. And I really had never heard of that book or heard of him. And I happened upon it. And I think it was a divine thing that happened to me that night, because it seemed like I needed to read everything in that book about, I had been taking personally a lot of the aggression and thinking I could stop it and thinking I could have some control over it rather than just simply getting away from it and learning not to put up with it at all. And so reading his book, he works, I think Mr. Bancroft, if I'm correct, works with men that have been, have gotten in legal trouble for domestic violence, and he does groups. So he's been around a lot of men that have struggled with that particular struggle. And so that book really, really was moving to me at the time.
You did talk about Deceived. I want to talk about a book by Barbara Steffens and Marcia Means, My Sexually Addicted Spouse. That is an excellent, excellent book. And so there's a lot of narrative books on what it's like to be the spouse of somebody who has sexual addiction. So just Google it. Our listening audience, or I just can't say enough great things about Claudia Black. Of course, she is the guru of adult children of alcoholics, and it's just so fascinating that she has taken this on as her newest mission, because she understands the anxiety, the post-traumatic stress, and then the complex post-traumatic stress, the trauma that goes on behind the scenes being married to somebody that you love and want to trust with everything you own, and then they betray you over and over and over again. Now, they're not bad people, but if they're not working a program, their behavior's compulsive, they can't manage it, and you are going to become the casualty of their behavior, and that's why you've got to have good boundaries to take care of yourself.
Right.
Can you agree?
Right. I would absolutely agree, and I just want to plug Claudia. In my opinion, I think she comes from such a place of adult children of alcoholics, and I think it does make her uniquely qualified to look at it from that partner's perspective. And she has a softness and a sweetness toward her that comes out, I think, in her books, and so I agree about her.
Good point. Now, okay, you're done with module 3, being a CSAT, and you've got one more module. Does being on the other side of the road, you know, here you are, you've been through it, and now you are going to be trained in treating sex addicts. Does being on the other side affect your sense of self, or do you find that you still consider yourself in recovery? I mean, here you are helping people learn how to recover.
That question is, I think I would have to say yes to that. I don't know if it's a recovery similar to addiction recovery where you're necessarily in it for life. I would hope that as I move through the effects of the trauma and the effects of what happened with the divorce and the different aspects of it that happened, I'm hoping that that I manage the triggers less and the memories are less intrusive, and maybe that's always recovery, or maybe it looks like something else. I don't really have an answer for that yet. The triggers still come, and sometimes they come when I don't really want them to, or when I'm in a dynamic with a friend or a different thing. And it just, you know, and I've learned a lot about triggers and a lot about trauma and memory, and that I've learned a lot about helping a client walk through that trauma and those triggers, and knowing how to give them hope that if you continue to move through them, there it does get better. So
you give some real hope, strength, and recovery to that. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right that it's not like triggers, the stress, the trauma go away. It's just that the more you work recovery, the more you learn how to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my experience is you use it as an opportunity to grow stronger. I mean, I bet
mm-hmm.
you $1 million that you are better at your own self-care, you're better at setting boundaries, you're better at following your intuition than 50% of the women out there.
Oh, and I absolutely, and I'm glad you brought the intuition part up. I think that's something that I learned along the way through the CSAT that I saw and then through the intensive I went to, and I learned that I really was ignoring my intuition and I really wasn't listening to myself. And I didn't understand that when people kept saying that to me. But as I've moved through the process, that's probably something I say to my own clients often is learn. I want you to learn to trust your intuition a little bit more, you know, as you go forward. And that has served to be a big, that helps me set boundaries. That helps me do self-care, you know, all those things. So.
Well, I so admire you for taking this avenue to encourage your own recovery and then to make something really positive out of it. It is amazing that you're willing to help sex addicts. And I know they're going to listen to you because they're going to know where you're coming from. I believe
mm-hmm.
there's probably a book inside of you, so I can't wait for that to come out. And, you know, it's just an honor to have a listener who got really clear with what she wanted to do. I mean, I heard you say that your husband asked for the divorce, but you paid attention to what you needed. You took that to the next level. You got your education, and now you are changing lives. So, Priya, I want to thank you. Do you have a website or anything for people to know how they can get a hold of you?
I have the website of the agency I work at now. It's not my personal private practice or anything, but it's flourishcounselingcenter.com.
All right. And if you need to email Maria, she can be emailed at maria.therapyaustin, as in the city, AUSTIN, @gmail.com. And Maria, you are really an inspiration. I want you to keep in touch because, you know, we love it when people turn lemon into lemonades. We love it that you have made it your mission to make a difference in the world. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Carol, very much for your show. And it really has been a help and an inspiration to me.
All right. Keep me posted. I want to hear how you're doing.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, well, that again was a listener who would run and listen to my podcast and was dealing with a sex addict as a partner, and then she decided to make it her life's mission to help sex addicts, and I know partners. I'm going to try to get her to do the APSATS because it is the most amazing training ever. That's APSATS. If you're looking for a partner-sensitive therapist, go to that website. And, you know, I always at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. And Maria Leslie Stewart is a woman who had the courage to take her life to the next level. Hey, I'll see you next week for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And don't forget, go to my website, sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com, and buy that book. None of that money goes to me. It all goes to sexual addiction research. And it's called Sexual Addiction Wisdom from the Masters. I'll catch you next week. It's been my honor, as you well know. And keep sending me emails to, and it's a new website, well, it's a new email address, carol@carolthecoach.com. Have a good one.